and now next-gen Taliban. For 2 years, Nicholas Schmidl lived in Pakistan, where he frequently wrote stories for American publications, including The Washington Post, Slate, and The New Republic. On January 6th, his story, Next-Gen Taliban, about the rise of a younger and frighteningly ruthless generation of Taliban leaders, was published in the New York Times Sunday magazine. 5 days afterwards, he found himself on a plane to London. Pakistani authorities visited his home in Islamabad the day after the story appeared and made it clear he was no longer welcome. Nicholas Schmidl eventually made his way to Washington, and he eventually here to Studio 3A. Welcome home, and thanks for coming in.
Thanks, Neil.
And I wonder, what reason were you given for your abrupt departure from Pakistan?
There's been no reason given up to now. On Monday, when the ISI agent from the Inter Service Intelligence Agency stopped by the house, he told our guard that I had been writing against Pakistan, that our visa had been canceled, and that we were living in the country illegally. On Tuesday evening, four uniformed police officers, a bit more in some more official capacity, came to the house with a deportation order saying that our visas had in fact been canceled, both mine and my wife's, and that we were ordered to leave the country immediately.
So writing against Pakistan, though, that part of it seemed to be important.
It seems to be. There are differing views coming out of the government, whether it was the writing itself, whether it was where the story was reported, but something certainly touched a nerve.
Well, let's talk about that story, which is of considerable. Well, before we get there, this is obviously in the post-assassination of Benazir Bhutto period. A lot of media in Pakistan has been shut down internally during the period of emergency that predated that. And so coming down on reporters is nothing new for the Pakistani government.
That's true. Since November 3rd, when they closed right after the state of emergency, there were a number of TV channels that were closed down. All of but one of them have been allowed back on the air, but with some restrictions and with some they're not allowed to do live broadcasts, for instance. The government seems the attitude nowadays seems to be that opinion journalism, you can say whatever you want. Reported journalism, there are certain red lines that no one's exactly sure though where they are.
Yeah, that's difficult, but apparently you crossed one.
Apparently.
And it may have been in Quetta, which is over by the Afghan border in the sort of southern part of Pakistan, a place where you report the Taliban is operating pretty freely.
It's interesting, actually, which is it's almost curious to me that this seems to be the conventional wisdom as to why what touched the nerve, because compared to a year ago, the Taliban are operating considerably less openly in Quetta these days than they were, say, last December. The spot that the Taliban are, in fact, were running a mini state at the time that I operated the story was in the Swat Valley of the Northwest Frontier Province.
Considerably further north than Quetta.
Exactly. Actually, considerably further north, actually about 4 or 5 hours north of Peshawar. And when I visited there in the middle of October, I witnessed something that I never thought I would witness in Pakistan before, and that was when the Taliban actually were administering public lashings one day. And so after the Friday prayers, about 15,000 people from the congregation, as well as all the leaders of this Taliban movement, marched over to a wooden scaffolding and proceeded to march three individuals who had been convicted in a kidnapping plot onto the stage, hold them down with one arm each, one legs, and then proceed to whip them with a leather belt. It was a fairly frightening scene, but it was also very – it illustrated that the government had certainly lost control in this area. There was no sense of government control. And about 3 weeks, 4 weeks after this happened, the army has moved in and the army has cracked down on the militants, and there is a fairly serious insurgency right now being contested in that area.
When you say mini-state, it's more than the administration of summary justice that you're talking about here. There were Taliban going around taking down the Pakistani flag and running up their own. They also had radio broadcasts.
That's true. The cleric who was sort of leading this movement, his name is Maulana Fazlullah. He had been nicknamed Maulana Radio over the past year. He'd been running these illegal radio stations. And you're right. After this public punishments incidents really emboldened them and gave them the confidence they thought they needed, and they began, like you said, moving out of the Swat Valley into the neighboring Shangla district. And as they were taking over area, they were taking over government property, including police stations, and like you said, running down the Pakistani flag and running up their own.
And when you say Taliban, and when I say Taliban, we think of the Taliban as an Afghan organization. What's the relationship?
Very difficult to say. At this point, it's ideological for sure. After the Tora Bora incident, after post-American invasion of Afghanistan in 2001, it's certainly top leadership of the Taliban were flushed into Pakistan. Some also of the foreign al-Qaeda elements also took up some residency along the border areas.
Sheikh Omar, the leader of the Pakistan, of the Taliban in Afghanistan, and we assume Osama bin Laden.
Well, there were rumors that Mullah Omar was living in Quetta for some time, and there is now speculation, even by Musharraf, that Osama bin Laden may be living in Bajur, which is one of the northernmost tribal agency in Fatah, the federally administered tribal areas. But now, like I said, it's what's most interesting is the way that these foreign fighters are beginning to influence the tactics that are used by the Pakistani Taliban, in that now suddenly suicide bombings are becoming all the rave, where even during the Afghan Taliban era, there was no incidence of suicide bombings.
And what you come to the conclusion in your article is that there has been obviously a long-lasting system of leadership, a number of institutions, religious institutions, political institutions, various kinds of things. But as the battle increases, old-time leaders and old-time institutions are giving way to younger and more ruthless leaders.
That's exactly right. And that's actually what prompted me to want to write the story, because it's the most frightening aspect of it is that these senior pro-Taliban leaders, people like Maulana Fazlur Rahman, who's different from Maulana Fazlullah, very similar name, but nonetheless, who was regarded as a godfather of Mullah Omar's Taliban during the 1990s, is suddenly now really, really frightened at leaving his home. He lives about an hour outside of South Waziristan in the Northwest Frontier Province, and there are death threats against him. There were rockets that were fired against his house last April. And so the old guard is losing their influence, losing their control. And these young kids, I mean, they're attacking not only the religious establishment that patronized them, that patronized the Taliban during the 1990s, but also, as the New York Times paper reports today, and as I mentioned the story, the ISI and the Pakistani intelligence services that also patronized them during the 1990s.
Well, this man you write about, Maulana Fazlur Rahman, is it, to put it in an American political contest, is it fair to say that he's being denounced as an Uncle Tom?
Something like that, for sure. And what's most interesting is that at the same time that he's being denounced as the militants see him as being a traitor, he has gained some influence amongst Western circles and amongst the establishment in Islamabad as being the kind of mullah that the establishment and that the foreigners could deal with. Okay, so maybe he's not as radical as the young one. And there's actually a lot of rumor right now that he could be pushed to that he could be a major nominee for the prime ministership, which he just narrowly missed out on in 2002.
So somebody we can work with. This is a man who's met with the United States ambassador.
That's true. That's exactly true.
And at the same time, the new generation of militants is firing rockets at his house.
Exactly. And which illustrates the lack of good options we have right now in Pakistan, I think.
Today, the New York Times reports in a front-page story that the very militants Pakistan previously supported to help fight its proxy war with India over the disputed Kashmir region have now turned against the Pakistani officials who helped train and support them. An example of, I guess, to use another American word, blowback.
Exactly. And what... Probably the most vivid illustration of this was late August of last year, when Baitullah Masood, who was become the leader of the Taliban movement in Pakistan, his forces kidnapped somewhere, the estimates vary, between 200 and 300 Pakistani army soldiers and held them for months. And it just showed the ineptitude of the army right now. Whether it's an issue of morale or whether an issue of training, it really showed that the Taliban have the upper hand in these areas right now.
He is the man publicly identified by President Musharraf as being responsible for the assassination of Benazir Bhutto.
That's correct. Although he's denied it, and he actually – there's a lot of speculation. He still seems to be the prime suspect by a lot of people. I mean, I also believe that probably his people had some role in it. But the government made bungled its efforts to try and pin the responsibility on him too soon, instead of letting the investigation just take course. And they released a videotape or an audio tape of a conversation between Baitullah Masood and one of his mullah lieutenants, in which they identified themselves as being in an area of South Waziristan where there is no cell phone coverage. And so it showed that this conversation and that this video or this audio tape had somehow been cooked up, and it's since the government's credibility has just been shot. But by the same token, they may be speaking the truth when it comes to pinning the responsibility on Beitul Masud.
You've got a weak government, weakened certainly by all the suspicions and accusations against it subsequent to the assassination of Benazir Bhutto. You've got an active religious, you call them jihadis, a religious jihadi movement, a country with nuclear weapons, considerable unrest. Do you fear that Pakistan is spinning out of control?
Pakistan has an incredible ability. Its resilience continued to amaze me for the 2 years that I was there as a fellow with this Institute of Current World Affairs, a D.C.-based organization that sent me there. They, nonetheless, this insurgency is certainly gaining a lot of steam. As we were getting on the airplane leaving on Friday morning, a fellow in the line said that he had just heard the day before in Islamabad that there was wall chalking all over the city now saying, we are here, the Taliban are here. There was a bombing in Lahore last Friday, which has been spared from violence so far. There was a bombing in Karachi yesterday as well. So now it's spreading out of the border areas and starting to reach the urban centers, and that's a fairly frightening development.
Nicholas Schmidl, thanks very much for being with us today, and we're glad you made it back safely.
Thanks, Neil.
Nicholas Schmidl, a journalist now living in the United States. He was expelled from Pakistan last Friday after his story, Next Gen Taliban, appeared in the Sunday magazine of the New York Times. You can find a link to his story on our blog at npr.org/blog of the nation. And you're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News.